I was in and out of jail a lot when I was younger. I'm 26 now. I'm 19. Or I was 19 and I'm 26 now. I have a community of around 300 to 400 people where I teach young adults and kids how to get involved in day trading, investing, and you know, crypto modern now. I get challenged between charging and offering free education. That way I can help more people because I come from a very small town and very bad background, but that's a better word. My challenge, I guess, for growing in this year is how can I make more money and get onto the stages if I'm not really charging, and I am charging, but without overcharging.
Okay, so when we're speakers, the way that we monetize speaking is through proximity. So understanding that you may not be paid to speak, but understanding that there's a value of proximity to the expertise that you have, which is crypto and trading, and has great value regardless of your age. And so when we start thinking about, before we step on a stage, if I'm not being paid, then what is my objective of being here? What's the value that I'm looking for? I know the value I want to provide, giving people more what they like and what they don't like, what they know, what they don't know, what works, what doesn't work. But what value do I want to receive to create that infinite loop of giving, to have an abundant opportunity that all of you? So for me, I look at things in the realm, since I'm speaking, of proximity. So when I have everybody around me here, this is free. I do 200 of these a year. But I still want to entice you to be proximate to me. So I may mention in an answer, come to my free Friday trainings. I've done free Friday trainings for over 26 years. The replays are available. They're absolutely free. If you don't have my book, I will sign, send, pay for shipping, pay for the book. Call me, leave me your address. I will do that. I do lives, Q&A every single day, 7 days a week, beyond the 5 minutes I'll give you on the phone for free. These are different layers of proximity. Now, if you want me to work with you every week and be a part of my networking group, I will charge you $497 a year to be part of my private networking group, get access to me every day, get special pricing on my stuff, and I'll guarantee it because I want to curate the room. I don't want people telling me, if they tell me I can't afford it, I don't want you in the room yet until you can. And two, if you don't believe that I'll guarantee it as a profit center, then don't join the room because you don't have the faith in what I do enough that you'll actually listen to me and do the work or be a valuable resource to everyone else in my network. More people make money off of other people in my group than off of me, for sure. They'll tell me, I met this one person, I'm making 6 figures, 7 figures from the introductions that are made in our group. So if you're interested, this is what you do on stage, then join me. Just tell me, guaranteed $497 for the year. You can come to all our dinners, meetups, masters, Super Bowl. We do a ton of stuff in our private, thousands of people, billionaires, millionaires, entrepreneurs. I charge billionaires. There's one here today. I think their company's $47 billion. I charge him $497 a year, and he thinks it's stupid. And he tries to convince me he shouldn't have to pay. I go, then you're not part of my network. You're not part of the frequency. You don't get what I'm doing. Then I have a wait list if people want to work one-on-one with me or have business consulting. I just put you on a wait list to figure shit out because I only have so much of that proximate time. I'm not going to change the time I spend with my wife, my kids, the other people that are relative to me. So figure out your proximity, figure out the value, not only that you're offering, but articulating it more than I'm asking for. Notice the $497 deal is more than I'm asking for. I do that not only through the guarantee, but the thousands of people and how they can help each other, and also the advice that I give. But beyond it, if you're not quite sure, the guarantee sure helps. And your credibility is directly related because... Yeah, your credibility is directly related to the guarantees that you're given. That's why credibility is the number one thing you need to work on at all times when you're speaking, Mars. Because if you're 100% credible, which no one is, people would do everything you said. If I was 100% credible, you had no doubt in David Meltzer and anything about me, and I said, okay, everyone, Friday, wire me $1 million. The next Friday, I'm going to wire you all back $2 million. You all would actually find $1 million. You would borrow it. You would do whatever it is, as long as it had less of an interest rate than $1 million. But I'm not that credible. But my credibility usually, you know, holds at $497 for the year compared to $1 million.
Noted.
Good.
Yes, sir.
So I just have one story.
Yes.
I just wanted to
Yes, please.
I was asked to speak, and I told her that it was $5,000 for my fee. And then I felt bad about it, So I was like,
negotiating.
I know you're just starting, so I'll do it for $3,500 because I'm going to be traveling and everything, and I can help you in this way. And then afterwards, I felt so stupid because she said she had $5,000.
Yeah. People negotiate. They negotiate against themselves.
I didn't need to do that.
All the time. And I've had that same situation where I jump to the gun and say, oh, I'd love to do that. The other part is, remember, when you speak, it's post-production content that is more seen than your speech. So if you speak in front of 100 people at Aspire like this, millions of people will see this video more than they will see the speech. So post-production content creates amplification and perpetuation that was never available to all speakers before. So if you don't have a strategy for amplification and perpetuation, which leads to have a strategy of modification, then you're missing out on 90 to 95% of the opportunities that exist by speaking, however you're speaking, virtually or in person.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mars.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Real quick, first of all, thank you for being genuine and humble and actually taking the time to help, because I see that's one of your mottos, to continue to help. So mine's kind of a two-part question. So my industry is kind of a niche. So I have an investigation firm and executive protection firm, right? So the two-part question would be, number one, how do you grow and scale your business effectively to provide a quality product without compromising the quality of your work? That would be my first question. And the second question would be, how do you target let's say the top 10% of the people or companies you want to target within the industry, like the bigger law firms, the higher net worth clients and all that.
So there are two different questions. Right. One is, how do we keep the quality high while we scale our business? So there's two things you need to know. One, you have to be annoying. Annoying means that you are repetitive and honest. People don't learn as quickly as you ever would think, ever. Just ask a second grade teacher, ask a parent. Why do you think like you're always repeating yourself and it seems so stupid that you told them not to leave their shoes on the staircase? Of course, at least. So you need to be repetitive. So when it comes to the most important things that provide quality in my business, values, practices, and execution, I repeat Monday, Wednesday, Friday, in an entire company-wide meeting or training, the values, the daily practices, and the execution model. On Mondays and Fridays, I have my lowest, newest employees recite the values, practices, and execution model, and then I ask everyone questions about them to determine at what layer of awareness they have, so I know how much I have to be repetitive with each person or be able to clarify the different layers of awareness that exist within the values, execution model, and practices. So being annoying is the key secret to having the quality work. The other is to create a plan to manage and develop visions, because quality is not anything other than perceived value. A lot, right? Quality, you could have great quality and someone thinks you suck, or your service sucked, or there's some other issue and then they project it onto you. You know, I'm sure there's a couple of my post clients that, you know, I've heard it before. Oh, Dave Meltzer says satisfaction guarantee. When I work as a one-on-one client, it's month to month and guaranteed. I know there's one guy that I heard was saying, oh, that's bullshit. I worked with him for so long, month to month, he went on pause. I asked him, would you like me to refund the last month? No. Then he started back up again. Gave him more introduction, helped him even more. Didn't work out like he wanted. I didn't promise to close the deals for him. He paused again. I said, hey, everything cool? Would you like a refund for your last month? No, it's me, it's the car. Now he's in a financially desperate situation, so what does he do? Sending emails, right, to his friends going, oh, fuck, he stole $100,000 from me. First of all, that's impossible, because even on one-on-one, I only charge $1,500 a month, and the guy was only with me for maybe 11 months. You know, maybe he was counting opportunity costs. I don't know. But this is the shit that has to do with quality control. And that's directly with my quality, not just my team's. So you need to be able to manage and develop the vision by either the structure of how you do your business, binding, non-binding agreements, whatever, and to also be forgiving to the fact that people attack you for a variety of time, value, and emotional changes that you have no control over. So that's the quality side.
And what was those points you said? The values?
The values, daily practices, and execution model. Then on the other side, how do we get bigger clients that pay more? So it comes two ways. Well, really four. In person, on the phone, via email, and social media or traditional media. It's a frequency. So if you're talking at a level of 100 employee business issues, you're going to get 10 employee business issues. You're going to get 10 employee businesses wanting to work with you. Right? When I tell people I coach the chairman of Gulf Oil, I coach the CEO of Synagence, like Verb, like all the other CEOs are talking. I'm one of the few people, I can do videos that are entertaining. So I get 4 million views on a Dr. J video saying he's the coolest coolest sports guy I've ever met. People love that. And I teach rules. All these kids, everybody's like, I love Dr. J. 4 million people watch it. But that doesn't do anything for my mission. What I look for is I do something talking to the people that can move my needle. So that I look at a video on LinkedIn that gets 400 views. And I look in the comments and I see, shit, the CEO of Sleep Number Beds is commenting right on. Doesn't follow me. That is meaningful to me. Now I can reach out to her because that's the client I want. All the 4 million, all I gotta do is say, hey, join my free Friday training, get my free book. I can help those 4 million people, share my content, do good deeds. They can all handle that. But Shelly Ibach, the CEO of Sleep Number, I want to talk to her about how I can make millions of dollars with her. So talk to the issues of the clients you want.
Gotcha. Well, I look forward to joining the community and doing the one-on-one.
Perfect. Thank you. On the wait list. Thank you. All right, who's next?
Can I ask you a
question? Yes. Come on here.
Eric, nice to meet you.
Hi, Eric. Nice to meet you.
I just had a quick question. So I started an aviation maintenance and management company here in South Florida.
Good business.
Good business if you have clients. What would you say to somebody that's young like me? Obviously, my clientele is very niche, kind of like his business, right? It's very niche. It's not a massive, like it's not everybody, not everybody owns a plane. So what kind of advice could you give me to start up to potentially get my first few customers or first few clients?
In person, on the phone, via email, social media. In person. Here today is Tia Manzoni. She owns an aviation company. She's related, has worked in the industry as a woman leader in a very male-dominated industry. She looks to help to young people and women in the aviation industry. She has more relationships than you've been alive. Years. Go to Tia, tell her David Meltzer sent you. I'll give you her number and say, can you help me? I started this business. Who should I talk to? Then figure out the critical business issues. Start doing emails to people. Start posting. Start phone calls, text messaging about those. Hey, I don't know enough about planes. So is it engines or spark plugs or I don't know what it is. But they're all around you. There's groups of aviation people in all areas. And all of a sudden you start building the people that you can give more of what they like or take away what they don't like. And Tia can help you.
Okay. Awesome. I appreciate it. Tia, what was her last name? Tia?
Manzoni. Can you give him Tia's number?
Yep, absolutely.
Oh, right here, right? Oh, after. Go ahead. Yeah. You're next.
Thank you very much, Daniel.
Sorry about that.
Hi, Mr. Meltzer.
Hi.
Daniel Gupta.
This is a guy I blew off last night.
So I had a question for
you.
All right. So if you, it's a relationship question. So if you got a really good friend and he takes you to an amazing party in Miami with a whole bunch of people.
First time ever going out.
I'm brand new. So you got this good friend. He takes you there, right? And then he leaves and gets Chinese food without you. My question is, how are you supposed to handle it the next day? What would be my approach to become at peace with this whole situation?
In all relationships, this is a great question, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
In all relationships, we need to evaluate the relationship by three things. So one, the relativity of the relationship. So if this person was trying to help your charity or trying to escalate your business or trying to help you make money, or he went out of his way the entire day to make sure that you were in that position, then you may say in accordance to relativity, I may be more forgiving than not. Two, association. What's my association with that person? Are they a friend? Are they family? Are they just a business associate? Are they my financial planner? What's the association I have? And kind of evaluate between the relativity of the person I have and the association. So if it was my brother, extreme relativity. Association, family, extreme association. Then the third criteria is one that's evolved for me. It's evaluating how much someone feeds you. And we have to understand, I know
that's
it hurts.
I'm
a little short on this one. But feeding you is not just them feeding you, it's actually bleeding and feeding. So my children feed me more than anyone else in my life, but they bleed the shit out of me. I got three daughters, 23, 25, and 20. You know, every time they go on a date, it bleeds me. But it's a feeding, right? And so when we put our relation into context since I left you for Chinese food, I would say relativity is newer but strong. Association is strong. And on the scale of how much I fed you yesterday and how much I bled you by leaving you, I would give forgiveness and a second chance.
I got it.
Thanks, Daniel. Yeah, we're here, right here. I'm a man of my word. I got to gain my credibility. There you go. You got one already.
No, no, no. It's not.
Okay. Oh, try to be humble when people got like three microphones.
Hi, David. I'm Elle Ullman. I'm actually the co-chair of the World Happiness Foundation here in Miami, and we have the City of Happiness, March 20th in Pinecrest Gardens. But I've actually been chasing this amazing man all over the world, trying to get on the same frequency so that we could do an interview.
Perfect.
And I heard you yesterday on an Instagram story, and you were talking about the consistency about the pursuit for happiness when you were down there. And I'm all about consistency, and I have a very simple but powerful question.
Thank you.
What does happiness mean to David Meltzer?
What does happiness mean to me? This is a really good question because it has to be defined because it is so subjective by time, emotion, and value. Happiness is derived not just from a state of mind, but it's derived from timing, value, and emotion. And so for me, it's how long can I learn to love what I'm doing or learn to love things I don't like or don't love or other people don't like or love? How can I learn to enjoy that? Because now I'm taking out some of the circumstances of time, emotion, and value because I have a stronger mindset on this is hard, this is a struggle, this is pain. My immediate pursuit is how can I learn, because life's about light, love, and lessons, how can I learn to enjoy what I don't like or don't love, other people don't like or don't love, then apply the consistent, everyday, persistent, without quit, knowing what lack of commitment means, without quit, pursuit of my potential. And so the greatest cheat code in the world is to learn to love what you don't like or don't love, other people don't like or love, and do it consistently, persistently, in the pursuit of what you want, not what other people want or missing or you don't have. And if you're able to do that, life will give you its cheat codes. It becomes easy because you're actually dissipating the disease that's created from the reaction to fear, the meaning of your past, a misalignment with your future. And so when you start thinking in the context of what true happiness is, it's my ability to learn to love what I don't like or don't love in consistent manner, persistent in the pursuit of what I want. That's what happiness truly is. I'm friends with Chris Gardner, very close friend and mentor of mine. And I mess with him all the time. I go, Will Smith is in his movie. I go, you screwed up the title. And he's like, what do you mean, man? I put happiness with a Y, if you know.
A little bit like the hot hand theory.
Yeah, and I'm like, but you don't get happy by pursuing. You're not happy because you pursue happiness. Happiness is the pursuit. And how you pursue is where happiness is derived, regardless of the outcomes. Because the outcomes could be no evidence or contrary evidence to where I think I want to be or better, or contrary evidence to what other people would think of as happiness, but yet you could be happy pursuing the no evidence and the wrong evidence.
That's an incredible perspective, actually, and that's what we do. We offer workshops and things to find your superpower to help people pursue.
And where can they find you?
Happiness. At L. Ullman. Instagram.
You got it. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, David.
Awesome.
I really appreciate it.
Please, thank you for following me all over the world.
I
wish I was 6'8". People could find me easier. I'm not even 5'8". I'm shrinking, goddammit. I'm hanging every day thinking I'm not.
Hi.
Good to see you.
Kevin.
Yeah, Kevin.
Yes. My question is, I own a watch company called Alchemy. I'm from France, and I just moved to the U.S. to expand my activity on the U.S. market. And I call the brand Alchemy because I considering that we are all alchemists, modern alchemists, because we are trying to changing our own life into gold by create value for people. What is your secret sauce, your formula to change your life into gold?
Yeah, so this is an interesting question. I have thought about this, practiced it, evolved it over the years. And so I started studying time And that's helped me the most. And time is relative to circumstance. So the simplest way I can describe it in alchemy is to divide your life. And your life is in your human experience, or your life in that measure, not the infinite life, but your human experience, your lifetime, it's divided into half, in my opinion. And the way we divide our life in half is not looking at how many years I think I'm going to live or want to live, but simply the only guarantee, which is tomorrow, that we're all going to live 24 hours tomorrow, except for if it's the last day of your life, you will be cheated. It's a guarantee. But most of us will have half of our life guaranteed tomorrow, 24 hours. So what I do is I take circumstances out of tomorrow, because the only thing that's not circumstantial about tomorrow is 24 hours. The weather, circumstantial, interest rates, traffic, delays, arguments, thoughts, they're all circumstantial, except for 24 hours. We're all going to have 24 hours of life tomorrow, except for the last day of it. And so what I say is, if I'm going to live half my life non-circumstantially, non-negotiably, then the way that I'm an alchemist is to live, number one, 8 hours of my day, every day, in intentional sleep. So I have a sleep coach. I am one of the world's greatest sleepers. If they had a Hall of Fame of sleep, you'd see me there napping.
Nice.
Because sleep allows me to recover, and I know the better I recover, the better I'll perform on the other 12 hours. And two, it allows me to access the omniscient and all-powerful. So I get more information and more energy, which also is proven to what? Make my next 12 hours more productive, accessible, and gracious. It's way better. So I now spend a third of my life, or two-thirds of the 12 hours in what? Intentional sleep to access the omniscient and all-powerful. Then the other 4 hours, I take non-negotiably every day, regardless of the weather, interest rates, delays, etc., and I say, what's next important to me? Oh, my health. So I'm going to spend a minimum of an hour a day on my health every day, non-circumstantially. So today, as much as it was a struggle, I worked out before I got here. I slept 8 hours, and now I worked out for a minimum of an hour. Now comes family. Minimum of time with my daughter, minimum of time with my wife, minimum of time with my son, minimum of time with other people relative to me. I still text my mom even though she passed. I'm happy, I'm healthy, I love and appreciate her forever. All those things. Then comes what? Finance, faith, study relativity, study of time. So now half of my life is on non-negotiable behavior that's so important to me that everything else is going to be okay, which means I don't really care about the circumstances. Because one, my life's going to be better because I have the best sleep, the best health, the best family, the best finance, the best relativity, and the best use of my time, and best faith. That sounds like a pretty fucking good life, right?
All right.
Now I'm better, even more importantly, of the circumstantial things, because I have greater clarity, balance, focus, and harmony on the circumstances. So I learned to pre-prioritize, prioritize, post-prioritize in a more efficient, effective way than most people. So now I'm getting not only more out of my life from the first half, but more out of my life in the second half. And if I do that every day, it does constitute half of my life, even though I'm only focused in on the one guarantee, which is 24 hours for all of us tomorrow. The only future guarantee is 24 hours, except for the last day of your life, you'll be cheated.
Okay, so can we say that the only link between our dreams and reality is the time we spend making them come true, right?
Progressing towards them with the behaviors that we have, focusing intentionally and giving attention to what we want to create the coincidences. So absolutely, but you have to add two words to it, or better. You're not living into humility if you say, this is what I want. You're living in humility when you say, this is what I think I want, or better. Because now God's, the omniscient and all-powerful, is like, dude, you don't even really know how much power you have. You don't know how much information I can give you. You think $1 million a year is what, your self-image? No, my friend, when you're in the infinite, now you're only limiting yourself by your self-image, which is dictated by the meaning of your past. So we always have to derive meaning aligned with where our self-image or our imagination can be. If you don't align the meaning of your past with where you want to be or better, you won't get there. Nobody in the history of the world has ever overachieved their own self-image. Ever. And the self-image is created by what? The meaning you give your past. I'm a loser. I lost everything. I'm a fighter. I lost everything. I'll never be able to get there because I lost everything. I'm two steps closer because I lost everything. I'm punished because I lost everything. I'm promoted because I lost everything. I still lost everything. but I gave a meaning to losing everything aligned with my divine direction and the self-image that I wanted to have, and I'm willing to have the behaviors from the meaning of the past and the lessons I've learned and the help I'm asking for, not only from God, but by all the people God had created and put it before me and coincidentally put us all together. Now, I can see I'm protected, promoted, loved, and perfected, no doubt. And does it take discipline? Yes. Are there exceptions? Absolutely. Do I make mistakes? For sure. I will tell you the one thing I don't lack, commitment. I'm the most consistent person that anyone that follows me, knows me, I'm going to do it, the non-negotiables. And every once in a while I make an exception because I'm human. And you know what I do immediately? I forgive myself and I start stacking the non-negotiables again. So if I don't work out for a whole hour, I immediately make sure tomorrow that's the number one. That might even pass up sleep just to make sure I'm stacking back on to the consistent, persistent pursuit of my potential. Identifying behaviors is good. Good in the direction I want to be, bad interfering with the direction I want to be. People are good if they're helping you in the direction you want to be. They're bad if they're interfering with the direction. And just because they're hard on you or pushing you or mean to you doesn't mean they're interfering with you getting to where you want to be. They may be protecting you and getting there. They're just honest. Because I will tell you, the four people that were honest to me, I thought they were interfering with my happiness and success. My mom, my dad, my best friend, and my wife. Because they were honest with me. And I remember thinking, why the no gratitude? I bought you this, I did this, I'm look around you. And then I realized, oh shit, what I thought was interfering with where I wanted to be was promoting, protecting, love, and perfecting me. And that's why I'm so grateful for my mom, my dad, my best friend, and especially my wife. Thank you.
Thank you.
Awesome. Next question. And then, oh, yep, yeah, good. Just for recording.
All right. First of all, it's an honor. It's been 2 years. It's Jeff Glauser.
I know. Yeah, yeah. Oh, I recognize.
Yes, but this man, first time I'm meeting him, but he's been one of the most important people in my life for the last 2 years. So I'm honored that we were finally able to connect.
That's amazing. Thank you.
My question is about questions, because we've worked together on and off for the last couple of years, and I always want to try to figure out how I can maximize the impact that you can provide with all the knowledge that you have. And with so many moving parts, it can be so difficult to kind of grasp on. And I want to ask you, what would you wish that your mentees and your coaching clients would ask you that maybe they're not or they're unable to articulate?
Yeah, it's not what I want them to ask me. It's more often. Right? My problem is I want it more than they want it for themselves a lot of time. It's just because my desire is so great. I know the common denominator of all successful people is a desire that you must be what you can be. And so for me, I don't care what you ask me. My job is to take what you ask me and align it with a meaning of what the question is or meaning of the past derived from the question to align you back with where you want to be or better and give you introductions and advice, wisdom and faith to get you to where you want to be or better. But my biggest problem isn't what people are asking me. You can see how I can twist and turn your questions into something that I think is more important to help you. It's how often you ask me. Most of the people that fail usually will tell me, I'm like, why didn't you bring that up? Oh, I didn't want to bother you. I said, well, there's a great business model. Everybody here, this is what I want you to do. Pay me $497 a year to help you. Allow me to guarantee it. And then never ask me for anything because you don't want to bother me. And please ask all your friends, families, and post everywhere that this is what they should do. I love that business model, but it's not aligned with my meaning or my mission, right? Because I want to empower people to empower people. I'd make a shitload of money, by the way. It'd be really easy to do, but it's not what I want. And that's what I see most people, whoever you're coaching, comes from, podcasts, then go ahead and ask for more. So you can give more, be given more, and receive more, and then ask for more than more. And if you're not asking often enough, you're not getting enough out of it. I gave everyone my cell phone. I'll say it one more time. 858-688-3294. I tell them to call me and leave a message, and I guarantee I'll give you a minimum of 5 minutes. I have said that to over 1,000 people today alone, and most of the people that know me for a long time know that I do this every day. In person, on the phone, via email, and social. My phone probably, even though I pushed really, really hard today, has two or three messages on it. And by the end of the day, we'll probably have two or three messages on it. And tomorrow may have zero if I don't ask for people to call me. You feel me on that?
I feel you for sure.
Good to see you in person.
Yes, absolutely.
I love the internet because I have no idea whether I met someone in person. I thought we knew each other five times in person. I was like, literally, really? I've never hugged you before? Mm-hmm. All right, yes. Cool. Thank you.
Man's the real deal. If you're not part of the community, you have to be. I mean, just the energy around this room, you can tell. You know, a lot of good-hearted, good-minded people. So join us.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that. Who's next? Mars? Oh. Oh, you're in. Yes. Thank you, Mars.
See you.
I've known this guy forever.
Yeah.
Probably one of my first coaching clients.
Indeed. Oh, my gosh. So great to see you. Yeah, he's fantastic. So please, everyone, join our community. And thank you for your time. I re-listened back on the way over here, the question I had asked you on Monday during our group coaching session. And I wanted to ask you, you're talking about living your 50% of your life in non-negotiable behavior and then 50% of your life in
circumstantial
behavior. And obviously putting into practice is the journey and perfecting it. So would you mind sharing with the group what are some of those best practices that you do for staying so consistent?
Yeah.
Because I think that's where I'm at of how to get more consistent with
it. I love that. How to be more consistent? Well, besides negotiable and non-negotiable behavior, there's another ease that I learned from learning to love what I didn't like or don't love. Two things I don't like or love, pain and struggle. Two things I learned about pain and struggle. One, pain is omniscient as well. Pain will always be there. No matter how much money you have, you'll have pain. No matter how healthy you have, you'll have pain. No matter how great your marriage is, you'll have pain. It's guaranteed. And people are like, I gotta, you know, overcome the pain. I gotta stop the pain. Pain is not a choice, so start there. Pain will not be a choice, circumstantially or not. Struggle will always be there. I used to say struggle's a choice. Pain will happen, you can choose whether you want to struggle or not. Bullshit. Pain is absolute, struggle is absolute. The one thing that you do have control is, how long do I want to be in pain? How much time do I want to struggle? So I have focused the consistent behavior knowing that what stops me from being consistent, pain and struggle. Mental, physical, spiritual, emotional pain stops me from consistent. Oh, I'm sore, I don't wanna go work out. Oh, you know, I'm starving, I'm gonna overeat. These are pains and struggles. So what I've learned about pain and struggle is very, very interesting because it actually is derived from biochemistry. Pain creates a chemical reaction. All emotions do, in fact, and help from research from Mel Robbins really helped clarify the vernacular that I've tried to explain this, and I didn't know the science until she sent me to the references in her book, Let Them, which I suggest you read. I really liked it. Yeah. So when you have pain or you feel emotion, you get a 6-second burst of chemicals. Bad pain will give a chemical called cortisol. Good pain will cause serotonin, endorphins. Both chemicals need to dissipate. And in 6 seconds of emotion, one emotion creates 6-second burst of chemicals. It'll take you 90 to 180 seconds to get rid of those chemicals. So what happens to most people is they experience pain. The ego says reaction to pain, which is usually a need to be right, offended, separate, inferior, superior, anxious, frustrated, angry, guilty, resentful. All of us feel that stuff. And as we feel those things, those are emotions. Boom, 6 seconds of pain. Boom, six seconds. Every time I get another burst of chemicals, it is gonna take me another 90 to 180 seconds to get rid of those 6 seconds. So what happens is I experience pain or fear. I react to it with the need to be right, offended, separate, inferior, superior. I get 6 seconds of an emotional burst of chemicals, and then I resist it. I go over it, under it, through it, around it, lie to it, cheat it, manipulate it, deny it. 6 seconds, 6 seconds, 6 seconds, six. And now it's like 180 seconds, 180. Now you know why you spend days, weeks, months, and years in pain. Mental, physical, spiritual pain. Because you keep on adding the chemicals without letting it dissipate out of the way. So to be consistent, because we know those chemicals stop us from being consistent, we know the emotions stop us from being where we want to be or better, stop us from being consistent. What we do is when we experience pain, we start to identify the clues and the patterns and the choices we make in reacting to that pain. I'm afraid, so I have a need to be offended. I'm afraid my wife doesn't love me, so I have a need to be offended. I'm afraid my wife doesn't respect me, so I have a need to be right. I'm afraid my wife doesn't appreciate me, I have a need to be inferior. I'm afraid my wife not attracted to me, I have a need to be less than. 6-second burst of energy, now I try to resist it, go over it, under it, through it, around it, lie to it, cheat it, manipulate it. 6 seconds, I never let it dissipate. And so it just gets worse and worse and worse, and I stop being consistently a good husband. Because of all those different chemical reactions. So what do? Well, let's understand chemistry and faith. I get a chemical reaction, 6 seconds. Instead of doing anything, going over it, under it, through it, around it, resisting it, lying to it, cheating, manipulating, and deny it, I just stop. Breathe through my nose, out through my mouth. Remind myself that I have an infinite source of information and energy. Recollect with the infinite source of information and energy. Remember with the infinite source of information and energy. And I let the 6 seconds of chemicals dissipate for 90 to 180 seconds. Now I'm physically, mentally, emotionally at ease. Now I can roll where? Into the divine direction. The detour has become divine and allow for divine time. No more 6 seconds bursts of chemicals interfering with all that information and all that energy. Stop, drop, and roll. When your mind, body, and soul are on fire and you're not consistent, everybody knows when you're on fire. I'm from California. We know fires. Stop, too soon. Stop, drop, and roll. Next, I'll be doing Gene Hackman jokes. Just kidding. Can I help?
Yeah.
All right, cool.
Thank you so much.
Last question, and then a big picture with everyone in front of the Aspire sign. Yeah, go ahead. Quick follow-up and then question.
So kind of talking about what you're just saying, that resonated with me, about like the stop, drop, and roll. But I feel like those periods of lower frequency can be longer than just 6 seconds. So, yeah, like I've had a lot of loss recently, and I'm looking to like raise my frequency.
This great, great question. He goes, I feel like it's a lot more than 6 seconds. So everything that we teach and we talk about, collaborate and coordinate with is a practice. Remember early on, I talked about values, practices, and execution. The human body is based off of behaviors and practice behaviors. I come from the sports world, it's really obvious in my world. Anybody that's played golf knows that there's no great golfers without practicing. None of them. Same thing with anything else. You just place golf with whatever. You want to be a chef, you want to be a scientist. You got to practice. You want to articulate quantitative value. You want to understand perceived value speaking. You got to practice. This is from the cellular structure of the conscious into the repetitive structure of the subconscious into activating the epigenetic layer of your unconscious competency, your DNA, your genetic and energetic inheritance. So you're absolutely right. So the answer to your question or your additional question is practice. If it takes you more than 90 seconds because you've suffered great loss and great struggle, first of all, join the fucking club. And two, practice dealing with your pain and your struggle to shorten the distance of resistance. Use wisdom and faith and practice it. So if, you know, people say, how do you quantify worry? I know exactly how I quantify worry. If I'm worried an hour and a half today, I want to be worried tomorrow an hour and 29 minutes, because now I know that I'm only 89 days away from getting to minutes and moments into the 6 second area. But it's going to take practice. I'm not going to be able to cut out a minute a day without practicing that stop, drop, and roll. That sound fair? Sweet. All right, last question. Okay, one more. We'll keep. All right, is that okay, Nick?
Yeah.
You're not going to throw me out? All right.
Thank you, David. So the question is really like a life balance question. So I'm married, I have 2 kids, but I'm a workaholic.
Congrats. He's a workaholic. No such thing in my book.
Yeah, right?
So there is it.
You know, a lot of people talked about balancing, but I feel like my life is balanced.
Okay.
So we happy at home, we happy at work.
Yeah.
The only problem that I feel like it's like I'm missing a lot of time with my kids.
And there you go. So Very common question. This is, you know, the 200 cities I'm in. Probably every time someone talks about balance, not enough time with the kids. Let me reframe. Number one, you're not a workaholic. You just choose to have activity you get paid for.
Like that?
You know, if you were Tom Brady, do you think he's a workaholic? Why? Because he gets most of what his activity, he gets paid for most of his activity. Goes out to a bar, they pay him. Goes on TV, they pay him. Stepped on the football field, he practices. It's just activity he gets paid for. Balance doesn't exist, by the way.
I like that.
There is no balance, there's harmony that you're looking for. You have harmony in your family and you'd like to spend more time on the activities with your family.
And I love my job too, like I love work.
Yeah, I love what I do, whether you call it work or not. Work seems hard, so I don't like that word. This is my daughter. I'm spending time with her.
That's my dream.
This is the activity I get paid for. No one, I'm not going to collect any money from any of you today, but I probably made, knowing how many of you are going to join my private networking group, be one-on-one waitlist people, hire me to speak, watch my videos that will make some other company like Travis Matthews pay me to wear their clothes or whatever I get to do. I probably got six figures from just being standing here today in our network of people. And I guarantee you one thing, I've made more for you than that. If you take what we do and apply it and practice it today. I have harmony in my life. And so when we have harmony, just spend more time, more activity with the people that you want to spend it with in the activity you like to do.
That's a good answer.
Good. All right, one more or no? My cell phone. Yeah, we're going to do one photo. Last question. My phone number again, 858-688-3294. 858-688-3294.
You guys got it?
All right.
Okay, so you had such an incredible success and also face that made your failures, right? So what's a failure in hindsight? What's the best thing that ever happened to you from that?
Yeah, so the question is, what's my biggest failure and what's the best thing that happened? In other words, when you felt the most punished, where was the protection, promotion, love, and perfection? It stemmed from the day I had to tell my mom that I lost everything, over $100 million, including her home. Only reason I wanted to be rich was to buy her that home. I had over $100 million and had to go to my mom in complete humility and say, I have screwed this up. At that time, I wasn't accountable. I was punished. And I told my mom that I lost her house. She smirked at me. In my mind, I was going to go there and she was going to drop down like Red Fox on Sanford and Son. I'm coming, right? Like I thought it was going to be the end of her life. And instead, when I said, Mom, I lost everything, she smirked at me. I said, I don't think you heard me. You need to move. I lost your home. I heard you. Do you need anything? Mom, sweetheart, you need money? What can I do for you? And I started crying. I'm like, Mom, what are you talking about? Mom, I have screwed this up. I don't even think I believe in God. And my mom told me, she said, son, smiles, I know you believe in God. You just believe in the wrong God. Now, 2 years earlier, my wife rocked my world because she said something to me at night when I was lying to her, cheating on her, all the different dumbass things I was doing, and she told me she was leaving. She told me, take stock in who you were and what you want to become, or you're going to die. And if I told your mom who you really were, imagine that. That's what drove me to start my transformation, because she was right. I couldn't face my mom 2 years earlier and let her know who I truly was. And there she was again. I was a much better person 2 years later, not perfect yet. And she was telling me a very valuable lesson. Here I am 18 years later, making more money, helping more people, and having more fun in my life. And my mom passed away, as you know, 2 weeks ago. And the greatest thing my wife said to me, I felt, still does, she said, you know what's great? Your mom knows exactly who you are. And she loves you, and she's proud of you, and she always has your back. That's 18 years. I practiced it. Not perfect. My wife didn't tell me 2 years before I lost everything, oh, if I ever catch you again lying to me, going to a bar, doing cocaine, going to a strip club, it's over. You can't, she didn't say that to me. She said, I know you. If you try to change, and I see that you constantly are trying to change, I'll stick it with you. That's all she said. And I kept trying and trying and practicing and practicing. And now I could gladly tell you, I'm a great husband. So thank you.